What is the universe made of? The universe has been putting on a striptease act for a long time. One by one, it has shed the veils that cover up the truth about nature. At first, the strip was boringly slow. The audience had to wait centuries before the first veil, which was the idea of a solid atom, came off. The atom is an ancient idea dating back to Democritus and his followers. Those philosophers in ancient Greece couldn't see an atom, neither can we, more than 2,000 years later, but they reasoned that if you slice up an object, any object, eventually you'd arrive at a tiny piece that couldn't be cut any smaller. The word atom comes from two Greek words that mean knot and cut. The striptease would have gone much faster if someone could have found a way to prove that atoms exist, but they couldn't. Therefore, if you asked what the universe is made of, the answers you got back were all theory and no action. But it was certain that some kind of smallest unit must exist. Peeling away the veils moved incredibly fast, starting in the 18th century, when experimenters actually began to experiment, and the behavior of chemical reactions gave the first clues that single, whole atoms were reacting with one another. Skip ahead to the 20th century, when evidence was found for electrons, radiation, the nucleus, subatomic particles, and so on. One by one, the building blocks of the atom were discovered. The universe could hide behind modesty no more. So the audience was shocked when the last veil was dropped, and behold, the dancer wasn't there. If you keep slicing a loaf of bread into smaller and smaller units, the atom vanishes into the quantum vacuum. Something turns into nothing, as we've already seen. But there's a subversive side to this striptease. Once the dancer vanishes, we are left with thinking about the universe rather than actually seeing it. Somehow we're back at square one with the ancient Greeks, relying on logic and speculation instead of provable facts. Right now, outside public view, there is a battle for the heart and soul of physics going on, to borrow a phrase from the prominent journal Nature. Two highly respected physicists, George Ellis and Joe Silk, wrote an article in 2014 that raises alarms over just this problem of pure thinking replacing data and facts. Can pure thinking be called science, which for 500 years has pursued the truth through measurements and experiments? Once you get down to nothingness, the zero point of the universe, the possibility of doing experiments comes to an end. How bothered should we be? Here's an analogy from everyday life. See yourself about to cross the street at a busy city intersection. In front of you is the walk, don't walk sign. Cars are pulling up to the intersection constantly, and some are turning right on red. Your object is to cross the street without getting hit by a car. To make this a real challenge, you must wear blinders, the kind that horses wear when they pull carriages in Central Park, so you can only look straight ahead. What is your strategy for not getting hit? Your line of vision is very narrow, and all you really have to work with are clues. This is much the same as a physicist trying to look into a black hole, or before the Big Bang, or inside the quantum vacuum. For you, the clues turn out to be quite useful. You can use your hearing to listen for cars. You can see when the walk sign is on. There are other pedestrians on the corner. You can observe them and step off the curb when they do. This gives you a pretty good idea of when it's safe to cross the street. But you don't actually know. The probability is high that you won't get hit by a car, and that's the most you can say. If you want to see the reality that lies inside a black hole, you can't. You can only figure out the probabilities based on various clues. The same holds true for almost every mystery we are covering in this audiobook. Science has gotten to the point where things are either too small, too big, too far away, or too inaccessible to the most powerful instruments in the world. If you take the tiniest subatomic particle that the largest accelerators, costing billions of dollars, can blast out of the quantum field, the very smallest particles, or whatever they turn out to be, are still 10 million billion times smaller than any accelerator can detect. Which brings us to a fork in the road. One sign says, this way to more thinking. Another sign says, dead end. Science hates dead ends. So physics keeps diving into deeper and deeper thinking. One camp keeps faith with the time-tested practice of doing experiments and campaigns to build ever bigger particle accelerators, even though, by some calculations, the energy needed for such a gigantic machine would equal all the electricity in all the power grids on Earth. Another camp abandons experiments and opts for pure thinking, the old Greek way, in the hopes that nature will one day offer new evidence that we can't see right now. Sherlock Holmes and Albert Einstein have one thing in common. They believed in logic. Einstein had total faith in the logic behind relativity. He once said, only half in jest, that if his theory had proved incorrect, then I would have felt sorry for the dear Lord. It's strange to think that if you hold a loaf of bread in your hand and ask, what is this made of? The ultimate answer is, nothing. But we have lots of good ideas about that. Such is the present situation when pursuing the mystery of what the universe is made of. There has to be a better way.